good, y'all? It's your boy Blue, another episode of Blue Dope. Today I have someone who has been really empowering and shining the light on black women in business, the entrepreneurs. And you know, if you listen to Blue Dope, we're definitely friends of that, and we love hearing these stories. Maybe you've been following her since her blogging days. Maybe you've watched her documentary on Netflix or Amazon Prime. Maybe you've been listening to her podcast or even attended one of her many events that she's had and been throwing for years. I have none other than Renee Blood in the building. What's up, Renee?
Hello.
How you feeling today?
I am feeling excellent. Thank you so much for having me. I am looking forward to this conversation.
I'm very glad to have you here. We definitely been trying to link this up and make sure, you know, in the busyness of the schedules that, you know, we made this happen. So I'm definitely happy to have you here. You're definitely one of the shows out there that you've either had guests that I would love to interview, or sometimes you've interviewed them already and I'm listening in like, all right, cool, as I'm doing my research, I'm making sure I'm not asking the questions Renee's asking, right? So I listen not to copy, but definitely to make sure I'm coming at things from a different angle. You've been blazing the game for a while, but I want to start off on a light, fun note.
Yes. Okay.
I haven't had a Renee in the building recently, but definitely Charlamagne came out and said recently, hey, you know, the Lost Boys, Mr. Cheeks, when he dropped the song Renee, those parts of the story he didn't really fully understand. So I wanted to get your take on if you could have changed the outcome of that story, how would it have went for you with that song?
Well, first and foremost, I love that you brought that up, because I loved that song coming up and I still appreciate it. I guess the only thing I would have changed was "Can Sis Have Lived?"
Yes.
To the end of the song, at least.
Like, did she even make it to the third verse? I don't know.
Right. I was like, every time I would hear that song, I'd be like, no, don't put that on me. She's not with us anymore. But love that.
And I know you probably weren't in New York at the time when that came out, but you know, they bring up the fact that if he was trying to rush on the Van Wick, like, if you drive in a Van Wick nowadays, you know there's traffic all the time. There was no way for him to make it there.
Absolutely not. It was not happening.
So let's talk about your roots. So Indiana.
Yes. I was born and raised in a little quaint town called Kokomo, Indiana.
Kokomo.
Right outside of Indianapolis.
Like the restaurant in Brooklyn. Shouts to Kevin Rhea.
Yes. Love that restaurant. Yes. And then my family moved to Champaign, Illinois.
Okay. Another place I've never heard of.
I know. Champaign. My mother worked in college administration at University of Illinois. And that's what brought us there. And then I left and went to college.
Okay.
At Illinois State University. And then I moved to Chicago.
Okay.
And Chicago is an incredible city, but I was always coming to New York for work, and I just fell in love with New York City, specifically Brooklyn. Let me be clear. Okay. I fell in love with Brooklyn, and that's what brought me here many years ago. So,
and I mean, I found out a little tidbit about you right before the show. Your mom is from where?
Trinidad.
Big up. So that, at the end of the day, we might be third, fourth cousins. I don't know. But You almost moved into a little mini Trinidad, in a sense, right? A lot of Jamaican community, Haitian community, but definitely a strong Trini community in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. You've been playing around with the roti shops out here?
I have. I mean, there's so many options. The food is so good. And that's what I was saying earlier. Like, that is what I love about Brooklyn. You could literally get a taste of any culture that you want to get a taste of.
Facts.
And you don't have to leave. Like, you do not have to leave Brooklyn to have an incredible experience.
That's a big fact. Tell me a little bit more about, like, Kokomo and, like, what was that neighborhood that you, like, grew up in? Was it, like, a black community mix? Like, what was the feel?
So it's very segregated. I mean, Indiana, come on now, KKK.
Got you.
My grandfather and my father worked at General Motors.
Oh, wow.
And my grandfather was also an entrepreneur. My family owns funeral homes. And so we lived in a majority black community. My neighbors on each side were black. Across the street were black. It was a black community Kokomo was segregated.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to mix, you know, the black folks with the other folks.
But it was like a middle class working community, or how?
It was. Okay. It was. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So what did you learn and what became part of you just growing up in a neighborhood like that first before all the moves happened?
Well, you know what was instilled in me early was the power of entrepreneurship. And the sacrifices that we make as entrepreneurs. Because like I said, my grandfather owned a funeral home, yes. but he was also working at General Motors. My dad was working at General Motors. It was a family business. And so it was normalized early for me. You know, even though they had these other jobs, you know, which shout out to people who are juggling nine yes. to fives and, you know, their businesses. Yes. But I got to see that very young. So it was kind of like in my blood. It didn't feel like such a risky thing to do when I decided to become an entrepreneur because I saw it growing up.
But it's definitely something you didn't necessarily want the family business. It's
absolutely not.
I mean, what was it morbid as a kid kind of being around like a funeral home? Like, what was that like?
It was. Okay, so again, because I grew up around it, my grandparents' home, like it was like their home, the driveway, and then the funeral home. So it was like they literally lived like steps away from the family business. And so sometimes if I was spending time with my grandmother and I had to go get my grandfather, like I am going into the funeral home.
Wow.
When my dad was working there, I was going in. And I saw a lot of deceased bodies.
Yeah.
Still, you know, I'm not necessarily comfortable around it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, it again, it was another thing that was normalized. One thing that I learned early was just the importance of valuing your life because I saw so many families mourning
yes.
the transition of their loved ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, my family wanted me to be a part of the family business, and there was a little pressure at certain times in my life. Like, I went to college, and then after college, they were like, well, my dad specifically was, you know, trying to see if I wanted to go to mortuary school. And I was like, absolutely not. He would always say, like, you need to be worried about the people who are alive. Like, the people who are dead are not going to mess with you or, you know. But I was like, no, Dad, that is really a ministry. Like, you have to have it in your spirit to be able to be of service to your community in that way.
Big time.
And I'm sure if I had to, I could find it within myself. But we actually talked about this recently, my dad and I, how, you know, while I didn't get into the family business, I am still, the work I'm doing is still being of service to our community.
Yes.
And that's really what matters.
Wow. Do you have any siblings that it got pushed over to? Or
not? I have a younger sister. She also was not interested. She is.
Y'all both dodged it.
You were like, no. See, he would always joke around like, see, I should have had a son.
Because
I think he thought a son would be more inclined.
He would have been like, nah, I'm playing sports, Dad. You gotta
like,
relax.
No. Like, no one wants to do that. But my sister also wasn't interested. But in different ways, you know, over the years, we've been able to contribute, you know, to the family business. Like, I used to do PR, so sometimes I would help with, you know, PR-related things. My sister is an attorney. She would help out in that area. So
nice.
I think when it's all said and done, they are just proud that we followed in kind of like the family footsteps and legacy of entrepreneurship.
Now, to start talking about your entrepreneurship, I'd definitely like to hear about how you took your PR work, right? Because I know you did that after college, right? How did you take that and then kind of take some of those tools to build your own brands?
So PR is one of those things, I firmly believe that if you do it, you could do anything. Like, think about Ava DuVernay. You know, she was doing PR. Now she's this incredible storyteller and filmmaker. PR is storytelling, right? You're just telling a brand story. And so when I decided that, you know, I wanted to start the blog, I was inspired by my PR clients at the time.
Nice.
I was still relatively new to New York City.
Okay.
And I was working with these incredible women who were building brands, building legacies long before it was like on trend, right? And I was like, wow, like, who's sharing these women's stories? And at the time, you had to be like a celebrity or celebrity adjacent to get publicity, to be like in an Essence magazine or Forbes. And I was like, who is telling these women's stories?
Yeah,
and do like my people back in Chicago know about what the women in Brooklyn are doing?
True.
And that's when I started my blog.
Got you.
you know, the PR skills that I have, and I'm just so blessed to still really be able to flex when I need to, really helped me to build the audience for the blog.
Got it.
So I started, you know, just being consistent with the content, but then I would, you know, produce panel events and conversations, and I would market those events the same way I would do anything for one of my clients.
I felt like there was definitely a time where a lot of the blogs that existed were salacious. So how did you kind of fight in a sea of that to bring something that was more positive?
It was not easy. I will tell you one thing. I'm glad that I kind of created my own trail, because I'm proud to say that, like, I've been talking about entrepreneurship before it was like a thing to talk about. And so to your point, the blogs, you know, back then were fashion, gossip, lots of gossip.
Lots of gossip.
You know, sports, style, pop culture. There really weren't any other blogs very specific, you know, in talking about entrepreneurship. And so I'll say that some of the opportunities that were coming up for some of the fashion and beauty and gossip bloggers, they weren't necessarily being passed my way. But I knew that what I was talking about was important, and I was going to keep going regardless of the popularity, because it wasn't, you know, it's not about popularity. It's about purpose for
me. Yes. So you've definitely kind of grown your business and the look of it in many different ways. So from blogging to She Did That, the documentary, what was that process, even trying to pivot again right at that point? And also wanted to ask, how did you feel that, like, did you feel the change of people moving away from blogs? Like, what do you think impacted that? Like, was it social media? Like, why did people move away from the traffic to the blog sites?
So we started moving away from our blogs because we had Instagram, you know, and we had that social media platform to, like, tell mini stories. So we didn't have to, like, go into these, like, in-depth blog posts. Like, you could literally communicate with your audience there, and actually a bigger audience that you could engage instantly, as opposed to, you know, a blog where they may or may not leave a comment, and then you may or may not respond to that comment. So I think the level of engagement that social media gave us really slowed down the blogs. But what's interesting now, and I'm sure you've noticed this, is people are starting to go back to their blogs.
And
that is because we're seeing, you know, every day how, you know, unstable social media can be. Just like recently, you know, Instagram was down. What else was down? It's like all these platforms.
Meta, like everything. Facebook.
And for people whose businesses are dependent upon these platforms, that's a challenge. So more people are aware of the fact that, like, yes, you know, obviously you want to leverage these communities you've built on social, but more importantly, you need to be able to engage your customer, your fan base, or whatever it is on property that you own, so to speak.
Yes.
Instagram is like literally rented property. What you own is your website or, you know, your podcast or the places that you're communicating with people that are not going to be impacted by whatever can, you know, happen with social media tomorrow.
Another interesting fact is that, I don't know, I'm not going to call it fact, but Tanika Renee, one of my previous guests, said that the younger generations, they're even pushing away from social media.
They are.
They're not into it as much. They don't want to live their life there. So, to your point, other real places of real estate, right? Where can they go? So you made that decision to kind of pivot, right? And was the documentary first before the podcast?
Yes. So the documentary came about, you know, I had the blog for many years, talked to women really around the world about their journeys with entrepreneurship. And then I decided, like, I need to do something different. Like, I have the blog, I'm doing these panel events, and I was kind of having panel event fatigue, if you will. And I connected with one of my really good friends, Alzo Slade, and we went around New York City and photographed 25 Black women entrepreneurs where they create their magic, did this photography exhibition in Dumbo. It was a hit.
Wow.
And I share this story a lot.
It's dope hearing it, though.
Yeah, it's literally one of those pivotal moment. So event is over. Everyone is like, oh my God, this was so dope. You know, it was a beautiful way to celebrate these founders and kind of memorialize them through these beautiful images, right? Didn't even have my shoes off. A woman at the event was like, so what's next? And I'm like, dick. Like, come on, sis. Like, please let me at least be in this moment, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, we do that to ourselves all the time. We can be in a moment and already thinking about what's yeah. next as opposed to, like, appreciating the time that we're in. But I'm kind of glad she asked me that question because I'm a Virgo and...
Me too.
Are you?
August 24th. I'm an August Virgo.
Oh my gosh, me too. August really? 29th.
There we go.
Yes, we are. Okay, we yeah, yeah. have all these things yes, in yes. common. I love it. So she asked me what was next. I didn't know. But like literally the next day and the next day and the next day, I was like, what is next? Like, are you going to keep, you're not going to go back to another traditional panel event because you've done this. You've okay. elevated it. What is next? Okay. And so I was just like, you've explored blogging, you've had, you know, these panel discussions, you've done now this photography exhibition, there you need to do a film. Mm. And I love documentaries, and I was always watching like startup stories, and I noticed that Black women were never centered. Mm. We may have been sprinkled in to some of these stories, but like never like fully diving into our unique experiences.
Yes. Yes.
And not just the challenges that we hear about every day, like lack of funding, but like the beautiful parts of being a Black woman and creating something for the world to experience. Mm. And so that, I felt like it was my calling to do it because I'm like, well, who else is going to do it? Nice. I've been blogging about us for years.
Yeah, yeah.
I am a storyteller by nature. Let's do it. And so I found a team to help me bring the vision to life, and we just got started.
How long was that actual process from when you had that thought to putting pen to pad to finding the right team to building the capital until the day it was released?
Ooh, it was a journey, literally. So the idea, the seed was planted in my mind 2015.
Okay.
We started filming. The first person that we filmed was Lovey Ajayi Jones.
Yes, yes.
And we started filming her in September of 2016.
Okay.
And at the time, I remember I was still doing PR. And so one of my clients had a Fashion Week event, and I couldn't, like, be on set with her. And, you know, I was still juggling, you know, my work with this passion yes. project.
Yes.
So 2015, like I said, idea in my mind. 2016, we started filming. I put my PR hat on, put together a partnership deck, got some brand partners on board. Okay. And just shout out to like relationships. Mm. And that's one thing I would love to talk about too. The relationships really are why the film took off the way it did. And even why I even got the funding to produce it. I was able to tap back into relationships from my PR agency wow. days. I used to work at Essence okay. As a consultant. They were a media partner.
Okay.
I had a connection at General Motors that I used to work mm. with in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so all of these people, Black women, let me be clear,
yeah.
believed in me,
nice.
Believed in my ability. And while I was not a filmmaker, they trusted me to
wow.
bring this to life.
Wow.
And they helped to fund it. And
nice.
So we wrapped up in 2018, premiered at Essence Festival to a sold out audience. Walmart was our partner for that.
Nice.
And we just started like doing a tour around the country, screenings.
Nice.
And I remember we were in, I think it was North Carolina. This woman was in the audience and she was like, love the film, you know, but like, where's it gonna live? And I had not, honestly, I hadn't given that a lot of thought because my PR hat was on like, it's a product launch and now we're gonna do, you know, mm-hmm. we're gonna hit all these main markets. But she was like, I want, you know, my nieces to see it. I want my cousins to see it. Where can we see it? And I was like, you know, we've thought about finding a home for it, but like clearly I need to give it a lot more thought and consideration. talked to another Black woman. She connected me with the distribution agency that we're with.
Nice.
And they started finding homes for the film. You know, started off, you know, you crawl before you can walk and run. So we started off on like Comcast, On Demand, Spectrum On Demand, you know, all the
local in the city
cable networks around the country. And then we found out that they got us on Netflix.
What was that like, that hearing that news, that moment?
You know what? It was kind of anticlimactic. And I say that because when I was talking to them, they just kept with urgency asking me for like new deliverables. Like, we need, you know, when you have a film, it's really important that you produce it to the best of your ability because you never know where it's going to land.
True.
Like, if I would have cut a million corners on this film, it would have never been quality for Netflix. And so there were just certain things they needed, you know, they may have needed subtitles in different languages and just all these requests. And I was like, where are all these requests coming from? And so my contact was like, oh, we need this for Netflix. And I was like,
oh.
I literally was like, is he talking about she did that? Or is like, are you talking to me? Like, or is this, are you getting me mistaken with another, you know, film on your roster? And he was like, no, like, and it was, someone dropped the ball on like the big announcement. And so he was just getting to like, we have to meet these deadlines. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, obviously there were tears of joy.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of work to be done after that because we had all of these aggressive deadlines to meet to make sure that the film was up to par.
Wow.
And then
did you have to re-edit things in it as well? Or?
We had to edit a couple things. You know, like we were pretty diligent about making sure, for example, that, you know, there was no artwork in the background.
You
know, make sure we had the rights for everything that was there.
Wow.
But then there were little things that they would catch that we had to edit out. And then, for example, one of the women's stories, Melissa Butler, she had a very special experience on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And in the original version, we had that clip from Shark Tank.
Got it.
But, of course, we don't want to get sued. So
was that like the replacement with like the picture, the three suits kind of like?
Yes, yes. You know, we had to get creative with the B-roll. Uh-huh. I was like, I don't want to lose this clip because That is the jaw dropper.
Yeah.
Like, did he really call her a colorful cockroach?
Yeah, that's wild. Very wild.
I'm like, I wanted to get that, but, you know, we didn't have permission to use that. Had to edit that out. So there were some tweaks that needed to be made. And as a first-time filmmaker, it felt overwhelming.
Okay.
But we got it done, and the film premiered February 9th of 2020.
Wow.
Right before...
Before we even go there, I wanted to ask, now you went to these brands that you had relationships with folks in power at all these brands. What was the commitment that you had to those brands, if any, or was it that they just wanted to be involved with this so they were able to take some type of funding to kind of give?
Yeah, so I did not promise them anything except for, you know, obviously, like, for example, General Motors had product placement in the film.
Okay.
Very subtle, but there was an Escalade in the film.
Got you. You like Escalades, so
yes.
Good.
Yes, and then Essence, you know, they had a woman that was speaking to a couple of the studies that they've done about Black women entrepreneurs.
Yes.
So they had presence in the film.
Okay.
And we also offered them presence at the screening events.
Nice.
And then obviously in the credits.
Nice.
We never promised them, you know, this film is going to land on Netflix because who knew, you know? We didn't know where it was going to live.
How did you choose the women that you wanted to even interview and get involved with this project?
It was tough. Oh my God, Blue. It was so tough because remember I had been blogging about the same topic for almost a decade or more at that point. So I had all of these relationships, all of these incredible stories under my belt. And so I started to think about who was going to keep it real.
Mm.
You know, like there's no way we're going to be filming and talking to anyone who was going to make this journey seem easy because we know it is far from that. So I wanted to make sure that the subjects would be honest about their highs and lows and everything in between. I wanted women from different generations, you know, like, or different stages of entrepreneurship, you know, maybe someone who is kind of just getting started, and then someone like Elisa Price at the time, who had been in the game for, you know, probably almost 20 years at that point.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to represent different parts of the country. You know, I did, it would have been way too easy to make it a New York story because there are so many women here kind of within reach. But I wanted to go back like to the Midwest. So we talked to Lovey in Chicago, you know, Melissa in Detroit. Yes. And so that was kind of the determining factor. And then also relationships, you know, also helped because.
Shouts to Daniqua.
Lit Brooklyn. Those relationships, again, are why, you know, the brands trusted me with their investment to be a part of this project. The relationships are also why the women who were featured trusted me, someone who had never produced a film, to tell their stories. Yeah. And I don't take that lightly. You know,
they're phenomenal, by the way. So
yes, thank you.
Now, when we speak about this piece where someone's asking you what's next, do you feel like you really got to digest and look at the film to think about, hey, all right, moving forward, I wish I did this, or like,
oh,
did
you get, oh my gosh. So every single screening event, there were moments where I was cringing because, again, being a Virgo is a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, yeah. That perfectionist little.
No.
Yeah.
So every time I watched the film, I was like, eek, like just seeing little things. You know, of course, looking back on it, there were times where maybe the sound was a little off. You know, things that you're going to notice if you watch a film like 100 and something times.
Yeah.
And so I think that's with any person who is creating, you know, any artist is going to look back on something they've done, no matter how incredible it is, and you're going to find ways that you would have probably done things differently.
What was the most impactful feedback that you received through these tours of these viewings? Like, what was the biggest piece that you're just like, yeah, that's a driver for me?
The thing that I heard the most that really made me feel like all of this was worth it was women saying, I feel seen. Because again, remember, this is before this wave that we're in now where, you know, Black women entrepreneurs are like rock stars and sharing their stories all day on social. Lisa Price wasn't sharing her journey on Instagram, you know, back in 2016. We were using Instagram back then probably just for pictures, but not really as a branding tool as much. So women telling me that I feel seen now and, you know, I understand now that, for example, if Lisa Price went through, you know, these particular challenges in entrepreneurship, that it is part of the experience and it's not just me. That was very gratifying because anytime you're doing something that is challenging or kind of like off the beaten path, you're looking for examples of yourself to see, like, can I really do this?
Okay.
The other piece of feedback that I got consistently was how important this was for the next generation of entrepreneurs.
Big time.
Lot of women brought their young daughters to the screenings, and that just warmed my heart because I think about it and I'm like, if I saw examples of Black women founders when I was a little brown girl in Indiana, where would I be now?
Yeah.
You know?
Big time. I mean, I have two daughters, and I was telling the story the other day, since my oldest one, she's only about to be 10 now, since she's been two, I've been telling her, you can be a CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told that to my other daughter, and only recently I'm like, you're more of a CMO. Like, I see a little different vibe. You have, like, a very creative thought process and analytical, so boom. But I want to talk about, even after the film, for me, it almost felt like, well, no, I really definitely want to hear more of these stories in more detail. And for people that were newer to you that weren't from your blogging days, it kind of had that opening. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to assume that drove you to your podcast.
Yes, that drove me to the podcast and also the pandemic.
Yes.
You know, like the project, at first I really had to reframe my thinking, Blue, because when the pandemic hit, we were like hitting our stride in terms of screenings around the country. Actually, we did a screening in Ghana.
That's sick. Yeah.
In December of 2019. And so
global.
It was popping, yeah, you know? I'm global. Like, we've done Ghana. I wanted to go to Nigeria. I wanted to do Kenya. Like, I wanted to do a whole tour on the continent with this film.
Wow.
And then, you know, the world shut down.
Yeah.
And so for a while, I had a little bit of, as we all did, obviously, a little bit of resentment, like, wow, I was just getting started. Yeah. You know, my film just hit Netflix a month ago, and I wanted to take my baby out and introduce it to the world. But I had to really stop and think, like, girl, you have a film as a first-time filmmaker on the largest streaming platform in the world when everyone is at home. Come on.
Yeah.
You could not have asked
for... Put that PR hat back on. And,
you know, I'm like, stop. Like, let's make the best of this. You know, obviously, it was a challenging time for everyone, but I think it forced us to kind of be creative about, like, whatever it was we were doing out in the world, how can we keep it going, you know, within the confines of our own home when we have to be there to be safe. Yes. And that is what really inspired the podcast.
Got you. So at first, was this at home? Like, that was a setup? Did you have to now put on a new hat to figure out how to do this?
Ooh, it was at home. I had a producer that I hired to work with me to kind of get me acclimated with the equipment and, you know, all the things you had to do on Zoom.
Yep.
All of that. And we really made the best of it. Okay. Like, I enjoyed those conversations because I was really missing community. You know, everything that I've done up until this point, from the blog to, you know, the live events for the blog to the film and all of those, you know, tour dates, it was all about building community around entrepreneurship. And so to not be able to connect with people the way I did, I'll be honest, there was a part of me that just felt a little like lost. Like, so what do I even have a career right now? Like, what am I doing? Because I really missed those, you know, live connections that we were making.
What was most lucrative for you throughout this whole process and journey of these different versions of your business?
I would definitely say the brand partnerships that came as a result of having the film in the world and the speaking engagements.
Wow. So it's not necessarily the film.
So I literally just had a conversation with a woman not even a week ago about this very thing. She reached out to me on LinkedIn, you know, wanted to pick my brain about, you know, independent filmmaking. It's not the film itself, at least for me, in my experience. It was not the film itself, not even necessarily the Netflix deal, but it was everything that came with that.
Wow.
Because now you are an expert in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, speaking engagements can be lucrative. You know, unfortunately, post George Floyd, we were getting a lot of requests for, you know, virtual speaking engagements. And that is when there was a lot of white guilt. And so a lot of those brands and organizations wanted to, you know, tap into Black voices, and, you know, their budget.
DEI became a thing.
DEI was a thing, and, you know, every budget wanted to amplify Black voices. Black women's entrepreneurship also took off in terms of conversations. And so it was kind of the perfect storm, you know? Like, I was able to do all these virtual speaking engagements. And even prior to the shutdown, the speaking engagements were definitely the most lucrative.
Okay, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I think that's important for everyone to know in here, because people assume, all right, she got the movie, like, this is what's going on, and it's the other piece.
It's the doors that are opened as a result of you now being this expert and you now having this product. So similarly, if I was an author and I had a book, and then, you know, if it was a New York Times bestseller, everything I do after that, like,
you
the price
tag
is gone. The price has gone up.
It's like,
you know?
Grammy award winning.
Exactly.
Like, that accolade is just.
Exactly.
Now you're a Netflix executive producer wherever you go. Like, at the end of the day, right?
Yes.
That's how it translates.
Yes, that's how it translates. But, you know, also, as you know, the you know, some of those, not even some, most of those promises that were made in 2020, they have now, you know, pulled those back. You know, obviously DEI initiatives are being slashed, you know, every single day. And so the vibe is different.
Yeah.
I think what I'm seeing now, which is actually a beautiful thing, is more of us realizing that, like, we have to support each other. You know, I'm seeing more collaborations. I'm actually working on a really exciting collaboration that we'll talk about.
Okay.
But as opposed to, you know, being so excited about being validated by corporate America and, you know, other communities, I think we're getting a clear understanding of what it really means for us to come together and pull together our resources.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go into the detail of this, but it's almost like a yay. He got in a lot of trouble for saying some things just because of how certain communities moved. And it's this need of, well, the Black community needs to support the Black community. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you say it's not just about supporting like it's a charity case.
Exactly.
Let's just keep our circle flowing. Let's keep this money flowing through the community and continue to build.
Mm-hmm.
How did things translate for you from the podcast to even going back to having more of these live events for She Did That? And I got to say, not even live events, because it's not panels. You have these different things where you're kind of putting people in a room with the brands, right?
Yes.
And it's
shopping
more of that.
Experiences.
There we go. So I want to hear about that transition and why you felt more necessary to go that route now.
Right. So I had been doing the Holiday Bazaar. We're probably going into our like 7th year at this point.
Wow.
So I was doing it. Initially, it was the In Her Shoes Holiday Bazaar, named after my blog. But once the film took off and when we came back after COVID in 21, I was like, you know, the blog is, you know, kind of dark right now. The film is kind of like the brand that I'm really focused on. This is now the She Did That Holiday Bazaar.
Okay.
And the reason why those events are so important is because, you know, a couple things, especially in New York City, a lot of the businesses that we love, you know, for example, you mentioned Lit Brooklyn, a lot of these businesses don't have brick and mortars. Oh. So to create an experience where I really curate like the best of the best in all of these different product categories and bring us together so that we can, you know, come together in community. But more importantly, so that people can shop with intention in one space. That is a really powerful thing.
Yes.
It's an ecosystem that we've created for Black women entrepreneurs. And within those spaces, you know, like I mentioned before, there are collaborations happening with these brands. Like this past year, we had 50 Black women-owned businesses. There are collaborations happening out of those relationships. They're sharing resources with each other.
50.
Mm-hmm.
That's 50. A lot.
Yes. It's the largest Black women-owned shopping experience in New York City.
Nice.
Yes.
In New York City.
Yes, in New York City. And probably, I want to actually venture to say around the country.
I'm going to say that too, because if it's New York, you know, New York's a big place to do big things. So
yes, because there are other, you know, pop-up shops and pop-up shopping events have grown in popularity, but mine is the only one that is specifically for Black women founders.
Wow. So you're having another event soon. So I want to understand kind of what else you're kind of dabbling into with these different types of events now.
So I'm excited about this next event because it's, you know, same premise, but very niche, if you will. Like we are, like it's beyond just Black women owned, but now it's a celebration of Black women in the food and beverage space.
Nice.
So on April 7th, here in New York City at Shell's Loft, which is an Afro-Latina owned space in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, I am partnering with Eat Okra to host Queens of the New York City food and beverage scene.
Nice.
Yes. And so anyone who knows me knows that my, you know, being intentional about going and, you know, purchasing and being in Black-owned spaces, a lot of it is rooted in food because I love to eat.
You have a favorite type of food or?
You know what? My favorite food is Mexican. And wow. For a while, I wasn't, you know, that would be the food that it's like, okay, I'm not going to really find a lot of black owned Mexican spots. However, there is one
really?
In Flatbush.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And it's called Taco Mommy's.
Okay. Okay.
And, one of the founders is Garnett Phillips. And okay. So they have everything from curry goat tacos. Mm. Like it's like every type of taco you can think of.
Okay.
In the traditional. But I love to have dining experiences.
Okay.
And so, you know, I just kind of handpicked some of my favorite black women-owned restaurants.
Wow.
And invited them to be a part of this. The partnership with Eat Okra just made sense because Eat Okra is the premier app for discovering black-owned restaurants around the country. And so when we come together, it's like, just marrying our missions to, you know, really elevate black-owned restaurants and then my mission, which is to elevate black women-owned brands.
See, I've heard of Eat Okra before, and I don't think I downloaded it. I'm going to make sure I download it right now because sometimes the Yelp reviews don't necessarily match my taste buds.
Oh, no. You have to download the app. And in fact, if you download the app, there's a discounted ticket rate for okay. our event on April 7th.
There so, you go.
Yes.
There you go. So one of the things that, you know, I think I've heard you talk about is the idea of taking She Did That and turning it into a docuseries, right? Mm-hmm. Is that something that's still on your agenda? Have you kind of pivoted away from that idea?
It is. Okay, so, you know, a lot has happened in the entertainment world since. You know, there was, you know, everything that happened, we're 24 in 23, with, you know, that world kind of like coming to a halt for
resetting,
a while.
Resetting, yeah.
Yeah, and so the other thing that has changed also is access to stories. You know, when I started the film and that whole process, like I said before, women were not on social media,
true.
You know,
true.
Going live or just doing extended posts about their journeys. And so I've been giving a lot of thought to what is storytelling in this space look like now?
Mm.
And I do have some ideas.
Okay.
And, you know, they will be explored at some point. I can't say that, like, in this moment, I'm actively, you know, in pre-production or anything, but I have some ideas. Okay. And I'm a firm believer that, like, when the time is right, it will happen.
Of course, of course. Now, I wanted to talk about stats and really just hearing it from you because there's been this explosion of black women starting up businesses. Why do you think now versus times in the past?
There's so many reasons why. But one, let's even talk about, you know, how black women are treated in corporate environments. A lot of us deal with microaggressions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this glass ceiling. We realize that, like, no matter how much we put forth, how much we excel, there's only so far that we're going to go. There's the pay gap, which is huge.
Yeah.
Like, why would we keep kind of like putting our blood, sweat, and tears into a role to only find out that our white counterparts, you know, men and women are making significantly more than we are.
Yeah.
There are spaces where we just don't feel welcomed, you know, and we feel like we can't show up as our full authentic selves. And that's exhausting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of us have decided, like, I'm going to take a bet on myself. Like, if I'm going to do all of this for someone else's business and to, like, build someone else's brand, imagine what I could do for my own.
Yeah.
You know?
I think everyone always has that fear, though, of hopping out. For you, at what point were you comfortable leaving the 9-to-5? Was it once the film was out? Like, what was that moment for you?
No, I left corporate America. I was actually at an agency years before the film.
Got it.
But I did not take the, you know, proverbial leap, if you will. Like, I stuck my baby toe in the water. I was working at a global PR agency here. Really got to the point where I was not enjoying the work. And I started moonlighting while I had that full-time job. and bringing on clients. And that's when I got a taste of like doing beauty PR, and I loved it. It was so different than, you know, the accounts that I was assigned to in my full-time job. So I just started like building up my little personal roster to the point where there was no way that I could like manage the side hustle work and the full-time work.
Got it.
So then I was able to talk to my supervisor at the time, and I scaled back from a full-time role at the agency to a consultant.
Got it.
So I didn't want to totally let go of the consistent income. So I did that probably for a year and a half while I still kind of kept my side hustle going. And then one day I realized, like, you're good. You don't need to keep, you know, you don't need to keep up this. It wasn't sustainable the way that I was working.
And that, but that PR piece, that's something you kind of just use for yourself now. You,
yes.
You don't have a roster nowadays.
No, I don't. Now, I will say this. Every once in a while, there's a special case where someone will come to me and they need, you know, help on a specific project. I love doing that. Okay. You know, it's not as intense as what I was doing before, more short-term projects, but I do that. I've also had the opportunity to work on other people's TV shows.
Okay.
I was a supervising producer on Bed on Black, which is Revolt and Target's pitch competition show. So my relationships in the Black business space have opened up doors for me that I wouldn't have imagined, and I'm really enjoying the journey.
Are you now a specialist at pitches?
You know what? I will say this. I know a good pitch when I see one, and I know when things need to be tightened up. I will say that. But I think more importantly, I have the gift of identifying founders who have that thing.
Okay.
Because especially for television, you have to be TV ready, you know, like you have to have the energy, the personality, your why has to be strong. You know, for this show specifically, for Bed on Black, we're big on like, how are you giving back to the community?
Okay.
It's a big deal.
And that's so, from the jump. It can't just be like, hey, these are my plans.
No, or we need to know, how are you already giving back? Or if you were to win, how would you give back? But that's really important with any small business or any Black-owned business. We have to give back to our community. Yep. We don't really have a choice.
With more Black-owned women businesses or Black women in business now, how do you think college is related to that? Is it direct? Because we hear that definitely the numbers have increased. More Black women are getting degrees even versus Black men.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do you think there's a direct correlation there?
I don't know. You know, I don't want to get into the whole narrative about, you know, the number of Black men in the community versus Black women.
Yeah.
What's interesting now, though, and I'm sure you've seen this just from the conversations you're having here in your podcast, a lot of people are deciding to forego college.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Because, you know, their thought is, you know, college is not going to teach me the things that I could learn, you know, in an experience, you know, kind of like on the job, on the fly. And I don't, you know, I think that college will definitely open doors for you, but I've seen so many success stories that don't have that college element that I'm like, it really depends on the individual, you know?
Another thing I'll say too is I think with more Black women in business, kind of the conversation I want to talk about was just how does it change the family dynamic? I think we see people like from Mayella Organics. We look at the CEO, her husband is her COO, right? So it just in your kind of in passing, how have those conversations, like what are you hearing about the change in family dynamics now?
I mean, and I think this is happening even outside of Black women entrepreneurs. The bottom line is women are, in a lot of cases, the breadwinners now.
Yes.
And that's not just in our community.
Okay.
We're seeing it happen everywhere. I think it's a beautiful thing, though, when a Black woman is an entrepreneur, because when we're starting businesses in our community, like, we are really pouring back into the entire community. As mothers, you're going to see a difference in that family dynamic. Mm-hmm. We're going to, you know, create job opportunities for other people, you know, in our community, in our families. And so I always say this, like, when Black women own businesses, when we all win, because we are literally looking out for the greater good, the collective, as opposed to, you know, making it about us individually.
Wow. That's like almost a mic drop moment. Big time. I mean, just thinking about giving back, right? How do you give back now? And obviously your whole movement is giving back because it's giving, it's pushing forward generationally. Mm-hmm. But is there anything else that you're doing that's unique that people may not even know about?
As much as I can, you know, I get a lot of, you know, inbox messages and DMs and LinkedIn messages from people who are inspired by my work, who want to, you know, maybe follow in my footsteps, if you will, or want to do something that's never been done before. As much as I can, I will have those conversations with complete strangers.
Got it.
You know, like,
got
if
it.
They reach out to me and I have the time, let's do it. Let's have a conversation. Because quite honestly, if it weren't for a woman who was a complete stranger talking to me when I was trying to figure out where my film was going to live, I don't know if I would be on Netflix, you know? And so that was someone who literally took time out of her vacation on Martha's Vineyard to talk to me.
I'm hearing her Oak Bluffs or something.
Yeah, I'm hearing her people kicking it in the background, and she is literally pouring into me.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I owe it to, you know, the next generation of storytellers or PR people or whatever it is. I owe it to them to, like, always, you know, just be just as generous with my time and my wisdom.
Now, in all these conversations, has there been, like, a product where you're just like, man, I should have thought of that one? Or have you been inspired in, like, to kind of create another, like, a product or anything else like that?
Not necessarily, like, I should have thought of that. But what I will say is that passion is contagious. Mm-hmm. And so having those conversations reminds me of, like, when I was first coming up with the idea for the film or, you know, coming up with new ideas I wanted to bounce off of people. The energy is contagious and you need it, you mm-hmm. know, because sometimes you could be doing something for so long that you kind of lose that spark that you had that got you to where you were.
One of the things I like that you did in the documentary was you had that segment where you showed kind of the men that were behind the scenes too and just being there to say, yes, like, I rock with you. I love that. I'm pushing that. How important do you feel like it is for men to support these women in these roles?
It is imperative. You know, like I said just now, the work that we're doing, launching these businesses, we're building generational wealth. Again, that does not just benefit us. It benefits our families. It benefits our communities. Mm. So this isn't just about us. This is about the collective. This is about Black people as a whole advancing.
Okay.
And so if there is a man listening and you have a Black woman entrepreneur in your life, please pour into that woman. She's probably hungry because we are always working and missing meals. You know, she probably needs a massage.
And don't ask her what to eat. Just get it. Just
get
it.
Just get it. You know, like, just think about anything you could do to take, you know, some weight off of her shoulder.
Okay.
You know, and it doesn't have to be these huge, gigantic gestures. It could be small things too.
Yeah. Now, I think when you're in these seats, you almost become almost like how they have A&Rs finding out who the next hot artist is.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get an idea and a barometer on what the next hot business is or who the next Black woman, and that's a mover and shaker.
Yes.
Who's out there that you're really, like, impressed by that you're starting to see bud?
Oh, my goodness. The first person who comes to mind is Brianna Arps.
Okay.
She is the founder of Mudo, which is a clean luxury fragrance. She also, years ago, was my assistant.
Wow.
Yes. And so I have watched her literally, like, change her entire life from, you know, working in the media industry here in New York, being my assistant. I used to have an annual holiday gift guide with 75 Black women-owned brands. She would work with me every year to produce that gift guide. But now she is a founder.
Okay.
And her product, first of all, the scent is amazing. Mm. It's unisex, so you can also check it out yourself. Yeah. But she is now in... she is in Sephora.
Nice.
She is in Credo, which is like a clean beauty boutique around the country.
And what does clean mean when it comes to...
Well, clean meaning, and I don't want to butcher this whole thing, but like without some of the chemicals you'll find in a traditional scent.
Okay.
I want to say her scent is also oil-based.
Got it.
But it is an incredible scent. The packaging is gorgeous. Wow. Even the intentionality of like how bold her font is. She really thought about every single detail.
Wow.
And I could not be prouder of this woman. So
there you go.
Yes.
What's next for you, just even on a personal note? Like, what do you got brewing that's driving you right now?
You know what? I am in a space, because the world is so crazy, I'm really being intentional about like one thing at a time.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like there have been times in my career where I could be working on one thing, but like also juggling 50 other things that are happening later. And so I'm trying to really, as we started the conversation off talking about, it's like being in this moment.
Yeah.
So like I said, really looking forward to the April event. Black Business Month is coming up in August. And so we are working on some exciting plans for that I can't share just yet.
Okay.
But yeah, those are the things.
Was the big collaboration Eat Okra, or was there another collaboration you wanted to bring
up?
Oh
no, the collaboration was Eat Okra.
Okay,
that was the first one. There's another collaboration that's brewing for Black Business Month in August.
Okay.
Last year, I did my first Black Business Month experience here in Brooklyn at City Point. We took over two retail spaces for 3 days. It was like shopping, conversations, another photography exhibition with my brother Nigel Crawford. And so just trying to figure out what that's going to look like for 2024, but really excited to celebrate Black women-owned businesses, and not just during the holidays when it's on trend, not just Black History Month, not just Women's History Month, but like 12 months out the year.
Nice. And I feel like the month to celebrate Black business being August is kind of something that's more people are learning about that.
Yes.
I don't feel like it's been publicly known for a long time that this exists.
No, I feel like we just started talking about it in the last few years.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just a really great time. You know, the weather is great. That's our birthday month.
Yes, exactly.
You know, the vibes are nice. Yeah. And so I'm excited about August for sure.
I haven't asked anyone this in a long time, but what do you do for your own just kind of peace of mind? Like, how do you shut everything down? Like, what is your go-to? Are you a spa person? Like, what are you doing?
I am loving Pilates.
Okay.
Pilates is my thing, reformer Pilates specifically. I don't live far from Prospect Park, and so that has really been like a haven for me.
Nice.
You know, just walking around the park. It's 3.1 miles. It's beautiful, especially as the seasons are changing. And moving your body is so important as an entrepreneur. We spend so much time, you know, in front of our computers, on our phones, and to just disconnect and walk and talk to God and listen to music, it really pours into me. In ways that I'm addicted to now, actually.
Nice.
So
nice. Since you're a Brooklynite of sorts now, you gotta tell me which Brooklyn artists are on your playlist right now.
Oh my God. Don't put me on the spot.
It could be all time,
like,
but don't gotta be.
What Brooklyn artists? So honestly, my music tastes, like either I'm listening to kind of like alternative soul type artists like Hiatus Coyote or King. I love Robert Glasper, but If I think about Brooklyn artists on my playlist, it's probably going back to like my 90s playlist.
Okay, okay.
And it's probably, you know, Jay-Z okay. or Lil' Kim.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that whole era of hip hop is in constant rotation.
Since you're from Indiana, I thought you was gonna say it's strictly Jackson 5 or something.
No, like, no.
Just playing with you there. But definitely looking forward to everything you have coming and yes. As you unfold and kind of let the world know what these things are. But how can everyone kind of stay on your pulse to figure out what's going on with Renee Blewett?
Yes. Everything I do, I am sharing it on social. So all over social, Instagram, everywhere else, it's I am Renee Blewett. And that's I am RenaeBlewitt. You can also visit shedidthat.co for updates on events and just kind of like newsletters and all of that good stuff, just to stay on top of what's happening.
There you go. Renee, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. This was such a great conversation.
It's blue dope.